and welcome back to another series of XY, a show about mental health in men. To kick off season two, I caught up with Johnny Benjamin, over Zoom, albeit given our current lockdown situation. I'll let Johnny talk for himself, but I think you'll agree his story is something pretty special. I really enjoyed catching up with him, and to be honest, he's the kind of guy that if I met in the pub, I'd 100% want to be pals with. And who knows, maybe one day when this is all over, we can meet up for a jolly good pint. Anyway, let's get on with the show. Mate, thank you so much for doing the show.
No problem.
You've been someone that we want to get on for ages, to be honest, and didn't really make it happen for series one. But when I was putting names together for series two, you were top of the bill. I was just really keen to have a chat. So thanks so much for your speedy response saying yes.
No, not at all.
The first thing I'd like to dive into is just to hear you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what you do.
Sure. So thanks for having me. My pleasure. I'm Johnny Benjamin. I am a mental health sort of campaigner, I call myself. So Basically do loads of different stuff within mental health. I'm a writer and a filmmaker as well, and a public speaker.
Awesome. And I guess that covers quite a lot of territory, like writing, publishing, producing, filmmaking. How did you like get into this field? Like, where did it all start for you?
So I'm 33 now. I guess it started for me in my mid-20s. I started making films, actually. That's how I started. I was always really creative. And I went to drama school.
Oh, nice.
It was quite tough, actually. I kind of was a bit broken down after drama school.
I bet, mate.
Yeah.
I've heard it's a tough one.
Yeah, it's pretty intense. Like, all my other mates were doing, they were all doing different courses and their hours were just like very minimal. But my hours at drama school were like maximum, like really tough. Like, it's not a typical student life, to be honest.
Yeah. But, well, that's it. Because like I've got some friends who went to drama school or did dance or whatever. And my life as a student was like 2 hours a day mandatory classes and the rest you kind of just built what you wanted. But yeah, they were always rehearsing or training or doing whatever it is they do. So yeah, I can imagine it's a different student experience to £1 pints at the union.
But, you know, no regrets, I guess. And, yeah. But when I came out of drama school, I didn't want to do it. And I didn't know what I wanted to do for a few years. But then, I got into filmmaking and started making films. And that led me to producing and presenting a couple of documentaries on mental health. Because that's essentially what I wanted to make films about because of my own experience of mental health issues. So I started filmmaking. And, that's what kind of led me into the whole world of mental health. It's pretty fascinating big world out there in terms of like mental health support and services and treatment
and that's kind of how you dived into the genre field, I guess. What would we call it? For you specifically though, I think what was really interesting is when you go on your website, really front and center, you say that at the age of 20 you were diagnosed with a schizoaffective disorder, and I think, as I said to you before, I've never come across that term before. And I'm by no means a mental health practitioner or a professional, but I've been chatting to a lot of people and that's never come up. So I'd really love, I'd love to hear a bit about that experience, if you don't mind me sharing, also just explain what that is.
So schizoaffective disorder is like a combination of schizophrenia and bipolar, like a combination of the two sort of diagnoses. Yes.
Yeah.
Diagnoses. I was diagnosed when I was 20. Looking back, I grew up having mental health issues from like an early age. From like really early, my parents took me to a child psychologist like when I was 5. So, really early on.
Yeah.
We knew that there was like, something there. I was having unusual like visions and things. And I guess that's what schizophrenia is like, having unusual beliefs or hearing things that aren't there or seeing things that aren't there. And yeah, at the time I was diagnosed, I was really bad. I thought I was being possessed by the devil. But looking back, I mean, I think a lot of it links to, I was struggling a lot with my sexuality and my religion. So I come from a Jewish family and, come from a Jewish family, I'm gay, and just those two things just didn't really sort of marry up. And I struggled a lot with, well, both, I guess, my sexuality and my religion, and that I think, I think there's a link between that and then this devil that I thought kind of was in me because I was a bad person, because I was, you know, struggling with my sexuality. So yeah, it was not a good time when I got that diagnosis.
No, and that, I guess, like, that makes a lot of sense when you give the context to it, because how could that not be quite a traumatic experience where you have like a core set of beliefs which are now being challenged by your internal monologue? And it's come up before in the show, you know, where especially individuals from the LGBT community, they do over-index with mental health conditions. And especially when it comes to male suicide, that is the most vulnerable group. For exactly the kind of, like what you've just described there does sound like a bit of a crucible for the problem as a whole.
For sure. But, you know, no one sort of, well, at the time when you're diagnosed, you know, no one really gives you that insight. You kind of have to find it out for yourself. It's taken me years to like work through like lots of therapy and lots of therapy, lots of kind of self-development sort of work to try and understand. I mean, I'm in a different place now because I've come to terms with my sexuality and my mental health and the way that my mind works. But it took me a long time to get there, for sure. As I know it does for a lot of people. It does take a long time.
I mean, I think that the crazy thing is that you strike me as such a genuine and humble individual, Johnny. But that, I think that's one of my favorite things about talking to you. And I don't know you. We've been chatting for like 10 minutes now, but you're an MBE, published author, public speaker, filmmaker. And you don't strike me as someone who kind of went into this for the street cred and the fame or anything like that. Like, it feels like you are making a genuine difference to people. And yet you have become very influential within the field. But speaking to you now, you just seem like such a genuine, humble guy. Like, I wouldn't get that from you, which is super interesting.
Well, I think, thank you. I mean, I think, to be honest, I mean, because I work with a lot of people that have been affected by mental health issues, and all of them, I think they all have the same sort of passion to make a change and to stop other people from going through what they went through, particularly young people.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, you know, there is that stigma and that is that shame, and it's such a horrible, I mean, growing up being a teenager, I think it's tough enough, but when you have mental health issues like on top of that, and you're having to, you know, it's not like, you know, think about young people in cancer, like the Teenage Cancer Trust, like, you know, it's out there and people talk about it, people raise money for it, and it's nothing to be ashamed of. But yeah, mental health or mental illness when you're growing up is still, I mean, it's getting better, but it's still something that I've got a long way to go on. And just, I think anyone that's been there just and has come out the other side just does not want someone else to go through that.
Yeah,
you know, there's so much passion in this. I feel really lucky because, yeah, working in mental health, get to work with so many passionate people that all have lived experience, that all just want to make that difference for someone else. It's sad.
Yeah,
you know, it's sad, I guess, that people have
to go through that.
Been through, yeah. But at the same time, it's good that we've got so many people out there now. It's like, you know, as we can see, like in the last few years, people are talking about mental health so much because they just don't want anyone else to go through it, which is
I think that was very much like the genesis of this show. Very much started from, I guess, like the older I got, and you talk about that whole quarter life crisis thing, where I've never had a mental breakdown. I've never had a moment where I felt like things had gotten really bad for me. Sure. But the older I got, the more I started to kind of like feel uncertain about the future and feel anxiety and worry and concern. And I'm fortunate that I feel empowered to talk to friends about that. I've never felt like a concern about doing that. But I've got loads of guy mates who never would. And what I found was that by me speaking to them about how I felt and expressing that vulnerability, then they started to open up, which is cool in of itself. But also I was like, oh shit, so you actually feel like worse than me. Like now that you're talking, I'm like, fuck, you're going through something. And then it was that combined with suicide just played a role in my life for like a few years running. It felt, it was almost like clockwork. I just felt like there was every year something happened. And then that was those kind of two truths for me were like, shit, we should probably talk about this more. And it was exactly to your point that actually I felt there was a need for a platform to discuss these things and break down that stigma. And I agree with you in many ways because I do think more people are talking. But I guess it's a good question for you. There are more people talking. I think men do feel more empowered to share. But do you feel the problem's getting better? Do you think that we are moving in the right direction?
Yes and no. I mean, yeah, it's great that we're all talking more. Not all, actually, because, you know, there are still a lot of people out there who won't. Like, my, you talked about your male mates. And, like, even, you know, no matter what I do or what I say, still I've got a number of, like, guy friends that still will not open up, and I know they're struggling. And so it's all very well, like, people talking, and, you know, like the government or like charities, they're always saying, you know, talk, that's all very well, but it's not enough. Not enough, you know. There needs to be, and also when people reach out for help,
you need to listen.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you need to listen, but sometimes the sort of health professionals need to listen and they don't. I know I'm being quite critical, but
I think there's
a lot of changes. A lot of changes that are needed still. We have made progress, but there's a lot of changes, not just in society, but in the sort of system, in the healthcare system.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah, that things are moving forwards. Sorry,
No, you're correct. Like, I think that's kind of, I would love to have like had a chat where we're like, yeah, things are moving in the right direction. So there's a positive tone there. But I agree. Like, I'm not always convinced that they are, because I think that, yes, more, it's easy to say, okay, more people are talking, but actually maybe the same amount of people that were comfortable opening up is the same. So the number of people is the same, but just those people are getting more airtime. So it feels like the problem is being addressed, but actually, well, I was already talking. So now you're just letting me talk to a wider audience. But are we actually enabling people at home to talk? And I think that's my point about listening, is it's all good and well saying we need to give people a voice. But if we then don't open our ears to what they have to say, then like, what are we doing? Like, what are we actually doing here?
Exactly. No, it's so true. And, you know, in the world that we live in, often people just don't have the time. They say they don't have, they don't have the time, because our lives are so full of so many different things. We don't have the time to, I mean, just giving someone that time and space just makes such a difference. You know, that's why like the different helplines or tech services are just so great, because you know, no one is, if someone calls or texts and they are struggling, there's no limit of, oh, you know, time's up, 20 minutes, off you go. You know, they've just got time and someone is there to listen.
And just vocalizing it. I think that's one of those cliches, but actually vocalizing something out loud almost like gives, re-empowers you and disables its power over you. Like I've definitely found that if you let something spin about in your head, it can feel, it gets bigger and bigger, blah, blah, blah. This is everybody. Well, maybe not everybody does know this, but then saying it out loud to someone, you're like, oh shit, that doesn't really sound as scary or as bad as it did when it was like bouncing off the walls of my brain.
It's so interesting, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's so interesting. I guess they say, you know, the saying is, a problem shared is a problem halved. And I know it's a bit of a cliche, but I know it's true for me. You know, you build things up in your head, and you know, I know with like when I'm talking to, say, my therapist about stuff, and I get so embarrassed about certain things, and he's like, just, it's fine, there's no need to be embarrassed. And when I finally say them, you know, the world doesn't crumble, it's fine. You know, it's just, it's so, what we build up in our heads, and often what we build up in terms of bad things that are going to happen that don't happen. Like, that's what I find. I'm always catastrophizing about, oh, this is going to go wrong, and oh, this person doesn't like me because they haven't texted me for like a week, and then they'll text me the next day, and I'm like, oh, but I don't give myself like I don't say to myself, oh yeah, see, there you go, remember for next time, you know, things aren't always as bad as you think they're going to be. But I always go back to that pattern of
because I think that's the thing. Like, I saw it was a friend posted, remember when Spotify 2019 recaps were all over Instagram and everybody was sharing theirs. My friend posted a meme that was like, me reading everyone else's. Oh my God, shut the fuck up. No one cares. But when I post mine, it's like, people will care about mine because I am the protagonist of life. Like, that's like, obviously every decision that is made revolves around me. And the same thing applies to mental health, where you think that every text you get, every email you get is reflective of you. But it's in the nicest way possible. It's not about you, and not you individually, but us. We think every response and interaction we experience is because of something we've done or who we are. But yeah, you are right. Just reminding yourself, like, people don't go about their day thinking, what do I think of Ewan? Like, how will I treat Ewan in this scenario? Like, you're not that big a deal, like, which is good, you know?
I know. It's the ego. It's the ego. The ego, the ego is quite a... Yeah. I mean, like, look at someone like Donald Trump. I mean, you know, he does think the world revolves around him, and it's scary watching him and, reading his tweets, and just that sense of being completely self-absorbed. It's all about him, and, you know, I should have won the Nobel Peace Prize, and I'm the best president ever, and I can't do anything wrong. And
Is it solipsistic? I can't, I'm not going to claim to have known that word. I heard it off of the Hilo, so credit to the Hilo. They taught me that lovely word, if I've got it right. But I think it's, because ego is something you can be conscious of, I think, so that you would know you have a big ego. Whereas solipsistic would be like, you unconsciously think that the world revolves around you. So it's you, it's everything that you do and say and feel is measured in your brain as like, it was because of me that this happened, like every event. And that's, if I've got the word right and I've got the definition right, then that for me is Donald Trump to a T, because I genuinely think he's got this unconscious thing of, oh no, obviously the world revolves around me because of who I am. Anyway, he's got enough airtime on this show. We're here to talk about you. You're more important than him. I think the main thing that I want to get into in this show was your hashtag Find Mike campaign. Because that story is immensely emotional, but has a super happy ending to it. And I wondered if you'd be happy to share it with us.
Yeah, sure. So, I launched this campaign in 2014, which I called Find Mike. This campaign was essentially to find the guy that stopped me from taking my life when I was in that bad place, when I was 20, when I was just diagnosed with that form of schizophrenia. I was put into a hospital, and I ran away from the hospital because I'd given up, essentially. But when I ran away and I ended up on the edge of this bridge, essentially this young guy came along, and he had this conversation with me. He just stood next to me and just started talking, and... yeah, we had this, a life-changing conversation, to be honest, where he he was just so kind and compassionate and just very gentle. And, you know, he gave me that time, you know, we said before about time. He really gave me his, like, he was like, if I need to be here all day, that's fine, which I just hadn't experienced any sort of action like that from another human being, any interaction like that before.
It sounds really, like it was really selfless.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. He didn't need to stop.
No.
But he did, and he did. And essentially, I mean, the amazing thing is that, like, he didn't have any training or anything. Do you know what I mean? Like, people might think, oh well, he's obviously got some sort of mental health background or training, but he didn't. He was just human, you know.
It's funny that, isn't it? Like, actually, yeah. Genuine human interaction, like, yeah. Genuinely listening to you.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
For sure. Absolutely. And yeah, essentially, I think that was the very, like, given up hope, as I said, I didn't want to live anymore.
Yeah.
But that was the very beginning of a new sort of start, having someone, because I guess, well, he believed in me. Like, he was like, you can get through this. And he was just so positive and encouraging and just amazing. And so when I was in a better place, which was actually 6 years on, because, you know, I had to be in a better place to try and look for him.
Mm-hmm.
I did the search, yeah, called Find Mike, but I got the name wrong. I thought, I don't know, you know, in my head, I thought his name was Mike in my head. I don't know why. But yeah, so I launched the search called Find Mike.
Yeah.
Thinking that, well, I did it with a charity which is called Rethink Mental Illness. And I was an ambassador, I was working for them, and I basically told them my story one day, and they were like, oh, you should try and find this guy. And yeah, next thing, we've launched this campaign. I didn't think we'd find him, though, because I just thought, you know, he could be anywhere in the world now. It's,
yeah, and even if on. Yeah, even if you don't find him, like, the sentiment is still the same, because it's kind yeah, I guess, like, when I read about it, I read it almost as if it was fiction, because I didn't, when I read the story, I didn't know you found him, if you know what I mean. Like, I just presumed that, yeah, because I knew you worked with who you work with, but obviously his name's not Mike. But yeah, for me, it was more just like the sentiment of it was really nice that, as a society, like, can we find Mike? Like, people that listen and people that, like, yeah, genuinely take interest. Anyway, sorry.
No, absolutely. It was amazing, the response, actually. So it took 2 weeks to find him for him to come forwards. And, you know, during that time, we had the most amazing responses. Yeah, just, well, we had a lot of people message us after seeing the campaign and saying, I was also on a bridge and I got talked off, or I was the one that talked someone off. Mm-hmm. Honestly, like, these messages were just really, really unbelievable. Yeah, none of us expected the response that we got. I mean, and then to obviously find him, like,
that's mind-blowing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is mind-blowing.
And then to actually, like, meet him, not just to know that he's around, but to actually meet him and sit down with him and, you know, talk to him. And I mean, that being reunited was really emotional. It was really
I bet.
Yeah, it was really, I think, because, for both of us, actually.
Well, yeah, I mean, not to put words in your mouth or his mouth, but that is a life-changing experience. Mm-hmm. Like, you have infinitely impacted each other in quite, like, a core human way. I mean, I don't think either of you will ever forget that moment. And even if you hadn't met, that's an experience which both of you would have held on to forever. So yeah, like, I can imagine how emotional it must have been meeting this other person who's played such a massive role, even though they're a stranger. Because Mike is Neil, as it turns out.
Yeah. So, love, yeah, that. This is where it got a bit confusing, because, yeah, but we joke about it now. Like, yeah,
I'm sure. Yeah.
No, it's kind of funny.
It is funny. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I mean, like, it was, I mean, he was just really humble. Like, when I sat down to talk to him, and it was all filmed because we were making this documentary, whether we found him or not. But yeah, for him to be so humble and just really, yeah, just, he was just like, I didn't do anything. And he obviously was like, come on, like, you know. And then for him to be like, well, you know, after we had that meeting where we were reunited, he was like, well, what else can I do? How else can I get involved? Because I think, well, like you talked about earlier about suicide, I mean, I think for him, actually, when he heard the statistic about men killing themselves, and it's one man every minute around the world, kills himself. And I think that was like, and also suicide being the biggest killer of young men in the UK.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that. And I need to do something about this. You know, I need to, which is how we started sort of working together and joining together. And he was just so, yeah, motivated after hearing that. And because it's a hidden killer, isn't it? It's a hidden, well.
Yeah, I've said it on the show a few times now, but it was, for me, the realization was like, the most dangerous thing to me is myself. Mm. Like, I'm way more likely to kill myself than I am to die by any other eventuality. Mm. And the truthliness, like, that has truthliness to it, you know, like the facts of that are like terrifying, because you're like, wait, no, but surely, like, I'm in control of that, so therefore, like, I'll just decide to not kill myself. But that's a misnomer. Clearly that's not how it works. So that reality is quite frightening. And I think for you guys, obviously working together now on your organization Beyond Shame, Beyond Stigma.
Yes. I should have said this earlier, but actually we're changing the name.
Oh, wicked. What are you changing it to?
Well, that's the thing. So we're actually in the middle of rebranding and renaming, because the name just was a bit too long and people kept getting it the wrong way around. Stigma, shame, shame,
fine,
stigma.
Fine.
So okay, we are rebranding, but we are still at the moment, we're Beyond Shame, Beyond Stigma, and we're still got the same purpose to help young people. But yeah, we are going to rebrand and rename.
I think that the big thing there that I wanted to just, if you could just share the details around how people can reach out, is the crisis messenger service that you have, because I think that's super amazing. And I'd love for people at home to know that's available.
It is amazing. Do you know what? Like, so basically this crisis messenger service came from the US, and I mean, it was launched in the US a few years ago. I guess, well, as a result of so many young people taking their own lives and young people not wanting to pick up the phone and talk to someone. So instead they developed this text service instead. Yeah. And it just, like, it was huge. It just took off. And so the Young Royals bought it here and they launched it about a year ago. And yeah, so we joined forces, and it's amazing. So it's 24/7. You just basically, well, with our one, you just text the word beyond to 85258.
Yeah.
I hope I've got that right. I just had a brain.
It's on the website if people want to double check the number.
Oh gosh, I need to check.
85258.
Yes.
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. But no, it's amazing. So you just text the word beyond to 85258, and immediately you'll be met with someone on the other end who, you know, is just there to support and listen and help guide you through. And I mean, we know that young people in particular are using it, like, in schools, in, like, going to the toilet when they're struggling, and just texting someone just to not be alone. And just, you know, and I've the team at the text messenger service have showed me the responses, like people text messaging saying, you know, that conversation last night literally saved my life. And it's incredible.
It's really conflicted emotion, because that's obviously amazing but really depressing at the same time. Like, it's how you, because it's a real shame that the scale of the problem is so hidden, but it is just amazing that you guys are helping facilitate that solution for so many people. That sounded really, like, cold and technical, like facilitating that solution. But you're supporting people like that is a really amazing thing. I guess the last thing that I wanted to ask, if I could just hit you rapid fire, if you had to decide, top Netflix show that you've been binging during lockdown, or Disney Plus, or Amazon Prime, or Now TV, any of the things.
So do you know there's a TV series, Kath and Kim?
Yes, not watched it, but know of it.
So Kath and Kim is an Australian comedy, and
fuck, I do know this. Yeah.
Do you know it? Oh, great. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Do you like it?
It's people... hysterical. Love it.
Yeah, good. So I watched the whole, I think they've got four series, and they've also got a feature film called Kath and Kimderella. But yeah, I binge watched it on Netflix a couple of weeks ago. And do you know, especially during this time, like the lockdown, coronavirus, like that comedy is just so important.
Yeah.
And you know, Kath and Kim is quite a ridiculous, silly.
Thank you for bringing that back into my mind, because I'd completely forgotten that show existed. And I'm jumping straight back on it. For anyone who's not seen it, it's got a kind of Chris Lilly Summer Heights High vibe to it.
Yeah, it does.
But then it's a bit weirder, and I would say funnier, actually.
Yeah.
Good choice, Johnny. Big fan.
What's your at the moment? What
am I binging? I've not really been binging a show as such. Obviously, back on Killing Eve, because obviously. Been working my way through Disney Plus. Been working my way through the old school Disney films.
What?
Oh man, we started at Frozen, we've done Tangled, Aladdin. Disney's got some like wild hidden gems on there, because they own studios like that produce National Treasure and some kind of older action-y films like that. Okay. I've been playing a lot of Call of Duty. That's been my fix.
Okay.
Never been a gamer in my life. Picked up a controller a few weeks ago and gotten pretty nerdy about it.
Wow.
Yeah, totally. I dial in with my friends on like a group chat and we talk strategy while we're playing it, because while we're playing Call of Duty, we'll have strategy calls. Yeah, we're those guys now. I've turned into that person. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm like low-key really proud of myself for doing it, even though it is really embarrassing. Yeah.
You'll be playing Fortnite. Have you played Fortnite?
I've not played Fortnite yet. And for some reason in my head, I'm like, that's a different person. That's like an obsessed gamer. Whereas me is sitting up at 11 o'clock talking shit. Yeah.
That's brilliant. I love it.
Yeah, it's good fun. Johnny, man, thank you so much for the chat today. I really, really appreciate you coming on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. And yeah, stay safe, stay happy. Thanks so much, man. You've been listening to Johnny Benjamin on XY with me, Ewan Plater. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we will be back next week with a gentleman called Harry from a rowing team called Audacity. More to follow, but they're doing something pretty incredible that involves a lengthy journey across the Atlantic. See you then.